few declarations of conflicts of interest. I think you had a couple of those, Dr. Rubin.
I have, yes, Dr. Rubin, I have one, which is case 20-168, and then in the regular agenda with like approvals for licensure, I have one that I need to, on the consent agenda number 4, there's one that I either need to recuse for or just we pull it out and vote on it separately.
Okay. So 20-168, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And then there was, you said,
4I, there's, 4I, Dr. Vanderveer.
Okay. Well, so what we'll do, if it's okay with, the board, Ms. Anthony, we'll, make it known now at 4I, Dr. Vanderveer, you'll be recused.
Okay.
Dr. Rubin?
Oh, I didn't know you were asking me. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. All right. So we'll note that when we get there. Number two, number three, we have a civility statement. I'll briefly read it. In accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Those violating this will be asked once to modify their behavior. If you cannot modify your behavior, we'll disconnect you from the phone. I'd like to run 4A through Q, with the exception, Dr. Rubin will be recused from 4I, specifically Dr. Vanderbilt. So I'll need some motions on that.
Dr. Bookie, I'll second that motion for approval.
Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin Larson. I don't believe there was an initial motion before the second.
Okay. I'll make the initial motion for 4A through Q with the Dr. Rubin is going to clear conflict
of interest 4I with Vanderbilt. And Mr. Chair, members, Dr. Rubin can just note during his vote that he is recusing from 4I when the board votes on the motion.
Okay.
I hope you all second the initial motion.
Okay. And then Dale, go ahead.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popeo?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin, you're recused?
This is Dr. Rubin. I recuse from 4I, Dr. Karen Vanderveer.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's an I on the rest.
And motion carries.
Okay. That will bring us into 5. We'll start off with case number 5A. This is case number 20-167. And to Jordan. Capcio, and are you with us on the phone?
I am. Okay.
Get on the phone.
I'll have Ms. Anthony give us the overview.
Okay. I'm on, Phil.
It is 11:38. It is August 12th, 2021. Pursuant to ARS 3215-51F, this is a formal interview regarding Dr. Jordan Copcio, case number 20-167. The licensee is present. Can you please state your name for the record?
Dr. Jordan Copsio.
Dr. Copsio, do you have counsel with you?
I do not.
Okay. I am Gail Anthony, the Executive Director of the Naturopathic Board. The following board members are present: Dr. Sadlick, Dr. Popio, Ms. Tibbetts, Ms. Gallen, Dr. Spatt, Dr. Campbell, and Dr. Rubin. You've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today, the process for the formal interview, and the possible actions the board may take. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case, and the questions for board or anyone giving information during this interview. If you have questions, you may ask them through the board chair. If you choose not to participate in this formal interview, a formal hearing may be requested at this time. This procedure is being recorded to provide a record. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly. Only one person may speak at a time. Please remember to introduce yourself each time prior to speaking. I will now give a brief overview of the case. And Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is case number 2167. On September 14th, 2020, the board received a complaint from PL regarding his wife, BL. After watching a docuseries by Jeff Hayes regarding the use of stem cells and exosomes, BL used the contact number provided in the video to schedule an appointment for the exosomes injection procedure. BL resides in the state of Oregon, but because there was no location in that state performing the procedure, she agreed to come to Arizona for the procedure. BL was scheduled to have a procedure performed at an office located in Tempe, Arizona, where at the time, respondent was working as an independent contractor for Travis Otter, the CEO of the company offering the procedure. BL, 78-year-old female at the time, presented to respondent on 1-8 of 2020 for the exosomes injection procedure, accompanied by her daughter. During the procedure, BL's daughter took several videos on her phone. These videos show respondent performed injections in the area around the front and base of BL's neck. Videos show respondent first swabbed the area of injection and then performed the injection. Respondent injected the left side of BL's neck first and then the right side. During a portion of one of the videos, BL's daughter can be heard saying, quote unquote, stem cells, and respondent responds by stating, quote unquote, exosomes. The complainant alleges respondent injected directly into scar tissue from a previous biopsy, and that may or may not have been cancerous. BL had not followed up with the procedure to confirm or deny malignancy, and did not indicate in her paperwork there was any potential history of cancer. During the treatment, BL appeared to be calm, and although there was enough time prior to each injection for questions, BL asked none. Respondent charted 3 cc's exosome, was put into 2 separate syringes, area was marked and prepped with normal sterile manner, 3 cc was injected into brown fat area at the base of the neck. Any bleeding was stopped with the gauze and bandages were applied. Post-procedure instructions were given orally and in writing. Patient had no further questions upon leaving. The complainant alleges the appointment only lasted 10 minutes and that respondent did not discuss options with BL. According to respondent, BL had already made up her mind to have the exosomes treatment. Respondent noted in the chart, quote, I discussed all options with the patient, including doing nothing, surgery, and medication. I informed the patient that there is no guarantee of results and that the therapy and that it, with the therapy and that it may take several months to see full results. The patient understands that I am giving my best medical advice with the information that is provided. If there are other health concerns, that may hinder the effects of the stem cell exosomes, and the patient does not inform the doctor, the patient takes responsibility for the lack of results.
Yes. I think you explained some of this before. Can you go ahead and give us a summary, please?
Where would you like me to start in the story? So a lot of this was done last time.
Yeah. So go ahead. Let me ask you my questions then, and other board members too. The exosomes, are those, do they come from the same lab that you get the stem cells from?
At the time that those procedures were being done, the office was ordering from U-Site labs, whether it was exosomes or Wharton's jelly components.
Okay, and then was that lab back at that time that Travis Otter, the owner, was that he owned the clinic that you injected in, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so that lab, was he the one that monitored whether that lab was had all the approval?
Yeah, he was the one who made all the deals with the labs, who did all the contracting with any places that we ordered from. He was basically in charge of making sure all that was taken care of.
Okay. And your job was the clinical portion?
Correct.
Okay.
It was just patient care. I wasn't responsible for any marketing, advertising, pricing, scheduling, phone calls, anything. It was strictly patient care.
Okay. And then it appears that when you did those injections, the SCM muscles anterior, correct?
Correct.
And then just out of curiosity, did you use any type of portable ultrasound, or did you just basically use palpation?
Mostly palpation. We did have an ultrasound in the office if it was needed for areas that couldn't easily be palpated. But finding the notch in the SDM is easily palpated.
Okay. So you were really, basically the notch at the SDM, so you almost said color for basic terminology, you were almost at clavicle area, correct?
Just superior to clavicle, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, and then since then, I think you explained to us last time, I'm looking at my notes, are you still working with Travis?
Oh, no. No, I resigned in May of 2020.
Okay. And then are you doing the exomes currently? Are you doing STEM? Are you doing Wharton's? Or which of those methodologies are you using?
Mostly just PRP right now. I was using some Wharton's jelly before the FDA rescinded their moratorium on June 1st.
Okay. Of this year?
Of this year, yeah, 2021, yeah.
Waivers, recognition of risk benefits alternatives. You stated that in your previous, you're still doing that method with PRP?
Yeah, there's still risk benefits alternatives, yes. That all still gets discussed.
Okay. Let me kick it back to the other board members to see what questions they have. So can I start with you, Dr.
Bufiel? Mr. Chair, members, apologies, this is Justin Larson with the AG's office. I just realized that Dr. Copsio was actually never placed under oath. So I kind of just want to put a hold on the questioning and get that done.
Okay.
Dr. Copsio?
Gail, could you say it?
Yes, this is Gail Anthony. Dr. Copsio, please raise your right hand. I will now place you under oath. Do you swear that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin again. Just for purposes of the record, I know that the board has already, you know, heard a lot of this in initial investigation, and Dr. Copsio, I understand you've already said a number of things in those proceedings, but for purposes of the record for this formal interview, I think it's best before we, you know, go into questioning that we let Dr. Copsio sort of just state his position on the case, having received all the information and the summary from the board.
Dr. Copsio, you brought up some points. Are there other points that you got from our last meeting that you want to clarify to the board before we go through board questioning?
It seemed to me like the purpose of pushing it to the formal interview was to figure out if there was anything with the thyroid that was brought up last time. But I'm pretty sure the videos that were provided showed that the injections were not done anywhere near the thyroid area.
Right, because you mentioned a little bit ago you were above, just slightly above the clavicle bilaterally.
Correct. And if I remember correctly, that was the entire purpose of moving us to a formal interview, was to get some clarifications on the position of the injection.
Yeah, that may have been from another board member, but let me run through with the other board members and get their viewpoint real quick. Dr. Popiel, can I start with you?
Sure. You may have answered this, Dr. Copsio, but remind me why you chose that injection location.
That injection location was that's where the brown fat is located. And, okay. And so that's where we were injecting, was to get into the brown fat area.
Okay.
Because the treatments were not recommended to be done IV.
Gotcha. And in your experience with other patients at this clinic, would you say that your time spent with the complainants was very similar to what you would normally spend with most patients that were coming in?
Yeah. I mean, the time spent is usually dependent on how many questions people have. As I mentioned earlier, she was giving a lot of information on the phone ahead of time. And then I have a big and kind of goes over paperwork and reinstates, take the basic history. Then I go in and follow up on that history, do the exam, give a recommendation of treatment, and then all the rest of the paperwork with consent forms and those types of things is done while I'm preparing the treatment afterwards. Most people are in the office for at least 30 minutes to have all that taken care of, but we block out an hour, or we did, I should say, block out an hour for every patient in case there was lots of questions.
Okay. I don't have any other questions at this time.
Ms. Tibbetts, questions?
I don't have any at this time.
Okay. Ms. Geller?
I don't have any.
Dr. Campbell, let me move to you.
Thank you. CEO, can you kind of tell me in your own words, what is your perception of your patient's end goal here? What is your patient setting out to accomplish, and how is your treatment going to help with that?
The patient was coming in for labile blood pressure issues, and it was, according to what she had stated, is she had tried lots of other options and nothing was really working. She had watched the docuseries and wanted to give this type of treatment a try. I on the phone with the patient care advocate, she was told that, that's not generally a thing that we treat, that it, internal cases are difficult to treat. We did mostly joint injections, but that if she was willing to take a chance on it, we'd be willing to try to help her out and hopefully give her some results. But I mean, her case was extremely atypical, and we had not ever treated anyone for that condition in the past.
And do you feel that the patient was adequately informed of that reality?
It was repeated multiple times, so I do believe they were informed of that.
And when you say repeated multiple times, by whom?
At least twice on the phone by the PCA and in the office by me. So it was at least three times.
And just to clarify, were you a part of the conversation with the patient advocate, or was there some type of transcription of that conversation?
It was the patient advocate directly. Oh, they don't get medical advice, so they came to me and said, this patient wants to be treated for this. What do you think? And so I told them to let the patient know that that's not something that's generally treated. They may not see results with it, but we'd be willing to try if they wanted to try. And so they directly relay that information from me.
Okay. And now, kind of taking a step back and looking at the entire process and what the typical results are and what this patient's goal was, what they had set out to accomplish when they traveled to you, taking that into consideration along with what the patient would ultimately pay that day. Do you feel that you have any further obligation to the patient with respect of, okay, there's no concrete medical evidence that is indicative of showing any progress, resulting from this procedure? It's a $15,000 procedure, ultimately, there's a extreme likelihood that there will not be any results here. So as your doctor, I feel it's in your best interest that I pass on allowing you to receive this procedure. Would that ever come into play? I mean, would you ever make that decision that it's just not in the patient's best interest to lay down $15,000 and receive a procedure that there's essentially no evidence to suggest that she would find benefits and have her goal met? And so, I mean, the only motive at that point is the business, at least that's my perception where I'm seeing from this. And so aside from just doing it to do it, and then now we're in the position that we're in before the board, do you feel in hindsight that this is something that could have been avoided had you maybe drawn a line in the sand respective to, hey, there's no benefit here, and so we're not going to just do something for the sake of doing it unless maybe you signed a document that thoroughly highlights that you will receive no benefits and that your payment is just to have a needle placed and some injection done, and that's ultimately your benefit, nothing else. Can you respond to that?
In the telephone conversations, I mean, it was made pretty clear what the pricing would be, what, the procedure was, what the expected result could possibly be. And the patient still made the decision to fly in from Oregon and do the procedure. They came fully expecting to have the procedure done and were aware of the cost of the procedure. And they were aware before they showed up that there was no research to back it up, and it was purely a potential result on their end for this treatment to give them a benefit.
Okay. Do you recall that particular day when you saw this patient? When this patient was done, so everything was complete, did you have another patient waiting, or was there a lapse in the time that you ended your consultation procedure with this patient until you saw somebody else?
I don't exactly recall, but I would tend to say that there was probably some time before the next patient came in, because this patient didn't take the full hour that was blocked out for them.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Castillo. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Dr. Spatz.
I don't have any questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Rubin?
Yep, I'm here. This is Dr. Rubin.
Okay.
I do have a couple questions, and one of them may be for Dr. Papil, not the respondent, but I'm not completely clear on the need for, and obviously Dr. Copsio, if you could answer. If you can't, maybe I'll ask Dr. Papil, but the need for an IND, or whether or not the exosomes were through IND, and then if so, the need for consent for experimental treatment if it was an IND.
Sure.
At
the time of the procedure, the lab was operating under 361 guidelines and not 351 guidelines, and therefore no IND procedure is required by the FDA for this.
Okay, got it. And then, thank you. Looking back at my notes from the last time we discussed this and then moving forward, there was, yes, one of the issues was, or the main issue was whether or not the injection site involved some type of maybe a tumor, but maybe not, versus scar tissue. And to date, honestly, we don't have any clarity on that. Unless I blatantly missed it in the records, because I know we had asked for some kind of record or scan or ultrasound or something, or path report that was consistent with the testimony given by complainant regarding that, and that there was the checkbox next to cancer was left unchecked, even though we left the last meeting under the impression that the lesion in question probably wasn't cancerous, which is based on my notes. There is no way without that kind of information that we can determine whether or not the needle had proximity to some type of soft tissue nodule, regardless if it wasn't near the thyroid. We simply don't have it. There's simply no way for us to tell. And if that, I'm assuming, therefore, that data from Mayo doesn't exist because we don't have it. And so because of that, there's no way for us to, you know, there's nothing that I can deem problematic here because we don't have any data. I looked at the videos. I listened to the videos. You can't see the actual needle placement. You can assume, but just based on the angle that the video was taken from, there's no way to tell. You can't tell needle depth. I think this was a half-inch needle. You can kind of see how far the hand moves, Dr. Copsio's hand. So I'm left looking at I simply can't, from an oncology perspective, I can't judge because I don't have any data, and therefore I'm left with that. And that's all I have to say, quite honestly. I don't have any more questions.
We'll allow about 5 minutes for the complaint. Is the complainant on the phone?
Barbara?
The doc, we're all on the phone.
Yes, and there were so many untruths in there, I don't even know where to start.
If I may interject, this is Phil Lane. I did the investigation on this thing. And if I may,
my apologies, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is Justin Larson at the Attorney General's office. The person who just identified himself, you said you did the investigation. I just to clarify, you didn't do any investigation on behalf of the board, correct?
No. We filed with the board, but not directly. That's correct.
Thank you.
So what's your relationship to the patient?
Well, I'm her husband.
Okay, thank you. That's all we need. Go ahead.
Mrs. Anthony, do you need to swear me in or anything? Or it doesn't matter?
Do we need to swear him in?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, let me go ahead.
Mr. Lane, she's going to swear you in. Real quick.
Mr. Lane.
Say what?
Gail is going to swear you in real quick.
Okay.
Mr. Lane, please raise your right hand. I will now place you under oath. Do you swear that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Lane.
All right. Let me address first the lab. The last material that came out of that lab before it was closed down was mid-September of 2019. So that was about 3 months ahead of time before Barbara went to Phoenix down there. In the main bookkeeper for this company indicated that from the billing that there was a mixing of the exomes and the stem cells. Dr. Copsio refutes that, I believe, on it. So at best case, whatever was injected would have been dead cells by that time on it. The other thing is, I would like to address this, what's called a sales rep. Susan Rogers was the lady we contacted with. She's works for a company called PBS out of Atlanta, Georgia. And she was the lady. She's a minimum wage position down there on it. And she set this thing up. We had scheduled the entire afternoon to meet with Dr. Copsio and review and go through and make a determination as to all of the problems. Barbara has a number of problems besides the blood pressure issue on it. The sales rep led us to believe that. We sent the medical records in. There was never a conversation with Dr. Copsio as to her medical condition. Therefore, Dr. Copsio had no idea what he was treating Barbara for. Nothing. Apparently, it was a predetermined, and he made the statement that he was nothing more than the practicing physician or treatment physician, I believe. So there's a whole lot more to this story. And as to the last thing on the Mayo thing, Mrs. Anthony, I do believe I did send after the last meeting, you'd requested those records. And I do believe I sent them down to you. But if not, we can certainly resend them.
I sent the records to them, all the ones from back when this was diagnosed in my neck. And we also sent the recent report that I had on in June. And
yeah, this is Phyllis Lane, and I have an email record of those health documents that were sent to Gail Anthony.
And the nodule is about 2 inches long now. It has grown, and it's right at my collarbone, as he mentioned. It's on the right side. The left side, I have them. It's not quite as large as the one on the right side. And we sent those records. It would have the size of them, the whole thing.
Mr. Chair, members, apologies. This is Justin Larson. I just want to remind everyone, this is a formal setting, and we do need to make sure that anyone who is that we're clear on who we are receiving testimony from, and who everyone needs to identify themselves. And if somebody is going to be testifying, it's ultimately up to the board as to whether they deem that testimony to be relevant, whether they need to hear from that person, and each person should be sworn in before they're going to give testimony. So we just I want to make sure we're not falling out of control here.
Okay. Okay, so Mr. Lane, you've been sworn in. So, Mr. Lane, you've been sworn in. Are you completed with your statement?
Yes.
Okay. And then, was that your daughter I heard in the background?
Yes, it is. She's located in Phoenix. One last comment. Barbara had a thyroid exam at our local hospital after your last meeting, and it was requested, and I know those records were all forwarded to your agency on it. So with that, I guess that's all I have at the moment.
Okay. So we're tight on time, but I want to give your daughter a few moments, so she's going to have to be sworn in, and then we're going to have to wrap the case. So okay. I'm sorry. What was your first name?
Phyllis.
Phyllis, and your last name is Lane?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So Miss Anthony's going to have to swear you in, and what okay. You've got about 3 or 4 minutes for you, Phyllis. So you're going to have to be pretty concise.
I will.
Okay. So. Go ahead, Ms. Anthony.
This is Gail Anthony. Ms. Lane, please raise your right hand, and I will place you under oath. Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay. And Phyllis, go ahead. You had a statement to tell us?
Yes, I just wanted to respond to Dr. Coxio saying he discussed options with my mother. My mom went into this meeting with Dr. Coxio as the doctor, and she was led to believe that he was going to discuss, do tests and figure out how he was going to treat her. He did not discuss any options. I was with her. He did not ask any questions about my mom's health condition. He just literally put the needles in her neck. And so I just wanted to clarify that. Dr. Coxie mentioned about he had telephone conversations with a quote-unquote patient advocate. I think I would love to hear more about that. And when we first approached Dr. Coxio to get her medical records to see what had happened with my mom, he actually straight up and lied about him being the actual physician treating her until he knew that I had actual videos of him. So it kind of showed his character, but I just wanted to say that he did not discuss any options, and I think the standard of care was not met, and I think that there was no medical advice, and he was the treating physician. And what did he treat?
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm Barbara Lane, and if you want to sign, I want to.
Barbara, if you can make it 2 minutes, then we'll go ahead and we'll do it. You were the patient.
I was. There were so many things untrue that he said.
Ms. Lane, I don't even know
where to start on this. Nothing.
Okay,
well,
Ms. Lane, I apologize. This is Gail Anthony. I need to swear you in, please.
Fine. Go ahead.
And please raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, ma'am. You may go ahead. Thank you.
We only saw Dr. Coxio for probably 10 minutes, and he discussed nothing with us. He never told me anything. I had been told by the patient advocate that he would explain everything to me before he did anything. She had told me the night before that something about, what do they call it? Anyway, where they put it in the neck, and she was, I didn't know, what is that called, Phil? Oh, darn it. He put it into the fat. I was not in there to lose weight. That's what they put. They put the stem cells in the fat because it raises your body temperature and you burn more fat. I was not there to lose weight. I did not need to lose weight. I didn't, there was no mention of my blood pressure by Dr. Coscio or by the patient advocate. I had put it into and given them the rights to check all my records before I went down there, which they had a right to do that. He did this, and it was startling to me, and I was without words when he put it in my neck. He never said anything. I don't know why he did that, why he didn't say something to me. I would never have allowed anything to go in my neck. On the video, I had never seen anything, anyone do an injection into the neck. They did sometimes do IVs, and Dr. Coscio said I had said I didn't want one. That was never discussed. I never discussed anything with Dr. Coscio on what he on his reports. He does a lot of different treatments, and I expected maybe that I would. And on the video, they did a lot of different treatments before they did the stem cells or whatever. I was never given any option on that. I was never discussed the pricing with anyone. I never, all these phone calls, I did talk with the advocate, patient advocate. Sometimes she would call me, but none of that was discussed. I don't know. There's so many things on here that are, I would like for you to ask me questions.
It sounds to me, and then we'll need to move on with the board discussion of it, just the board members themselves. But it sounds to me as though there was a lot of communication errors.
You're right. There was no communication.
I'm going to have to move back to my board members, and I need to get their feedback, because then we need to draw closure to this. So if I can... if it's all right with you, Dr. Popiel, let me start up with you, and we'll go through the list, and we'll try to get some closure to this today.
Sure. Well, obviously, there's a lot of layers to this. You know, I think a lot of the confusion comes from the numerous people that the complainant had to speak to before her appointment. I think, you know, I can only imagine that at least there was some brief discussions as to what the patient was interested in accomplishing prior to getting to the clinic, whether it was through the patient advocate or related to Dr. Coscio. Dr. Coscio is pretty clear that he had communication with, not with the patient directly, but about this patient and the concerns that this is not something that they're doing and have seen before. So I find it hard to believe that there wasn't some decent communication about what was to be done, what was to be the pricing for this. I really find it hard to believe that the patient flew to Arizona having no idea what the pricing was going to be. Maybe that's the case, but that doesn't necessarily make sense. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the issues here don't arise with Dr. Coscio. They arise with Dr. Otter and this whole facility and clinic and the way things were run. You know, clearly we've had an injection of a suspicious substance.
May I interrupt for a minute?
No, he's
we never knew Otter. That was something that came out later.
I know you don't know Dr. Otter. That's not my point. My point is that a lot of your concerns need to be raised through suing this company or raising the concerns with the attorney general for the company. Dr. Coscio was solely an employee, or not even an employee, an independent contractor of this company. So
all he was doing was putting a jab in me.
Ma'am.
Right.
You've had your time to speak. I'm speaking now. Many of your concerns need to be raised through by suing that company or raising your concerns with the attorney general. So as far as Dr. Coscio and his liability in this situation, you have a medical history. You go based on that medical history. Clearly, based on the videos, it does not look like the complainant is in any sort of acute distress or saying, why are you injecting my neck? What's going on here? So there's just a lot of concerns that I have that, you know, he said, she said in this situation. I have concerns over what was being injected.
This is
and obviously I have concerns anyway, over so the idea really of what was the expected outcome. However, it does sound like clearly that was relayed to the complainant, as far as that we do not have any sort of data suggesting that this is something that is proven to or very likely to resolve the situation. So that's kind of my take on the situation, where that leaves us as far as, you know, a decision with Dr. Coppio. I certainly want to raise that up to the board for a discussion.
Mr. Chair, members.
Well, we sent the information to you. If you didn't read it, we couldn't help that.
No, he's read it. And we need to go through our role, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Justin Larson, I just want to make sure here that no other board members have any further questions for anybody, and B, before we start go any further into deliberations, that we give Dr. Coppio just an opportunity to make any closing statements.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Larson. Dr. Coppio, do you have any? Talking in deliberation now, because we need to roll through this case. Do you have anything you'd like to add or comment?
Not really anything that I'd like to add. I mean, everything that I did is the typical practice for the office. I mean, every patient gets an intake, every patient gets an exam, every patient gets a discussion of what their options are, every patient gets told the treatment and the cost ahead of time, and they make their decisions either in the office that day or at another point in time. This case wasn't any different than any other case that comes in the office outside of what they wanted treated and what the potential expected results were.
Okay, thank you. Board members, we need to draw closure, so I need to throw it out for some opinions and certain conclusions, please.
This is Dr. Rubin.
Go ahead, Dr. Rubin.
Hi, this is Dr. Rubin. Dr. Sadalek, I listened to the testimony from Mr. Lane and the Lanes, and the things that came through to me were clearly still about the neck and the location of the injection. I heard Mr. Lane, who did the research, said that he forwarded such records to us. I just looked through all 169 pages of our board packet again. Well, after I had talked, I still don't see them. I also heard the complainant say that she has a growing lesion somewhere on the base of her neck. And please, this is my time, Ms. Lane. This is not, I'm just preempting an interruption. I also want to reiterate to the complainants again that we have no purview whatsoever regarding business practices. This is about medical treatment, standard of care, professionalism. We have chart notes. What we don't have is the records about the neck, and I don't have any. It said there was a visit that's, you know, been since we last met, that there's a growing lesion. I don't feel comfortable, to be honest with you, making a decision, at least from my vote, without those records, because we had asked for them. They said they were sent, and I can't see them. So if I missed them again, I'd like a chance to review them before we move into vote. Sorry that this would delay things, but that's the one thing that stands out for me.
Did you know it wasn't in the package?
Okay.
I thought.
Yeah, because it was redacted.
And
it was probably sent after the fact.
I don't have any comment in this time. Thank you.
But even so, it's after this whole process, so it doesn't have any bearing on it.
I mean, board, we have a couple choices, so let me kind of roll through them, and if you have other options, then please, you know, let's discuss them. One could possibly be a letter of concern based on the non-disciplinary course, based on the benefits. Basically, this would be on benefits versus cost. Again, Dr. Coppio didn't probably control the cost. Those were assigned. He's an contractor, as Dr. Popiel pointed out. The other could be based on the exome, just the whole exome issue. The other could simply be lack of communication, which in essence, since he's the one that did the injections, there would be, you know, between, communication skills. So those are some of the items that I have. We could make a motion on a letter of concern and then stipulate, or we could make whatever motion the board would like to. Let me put it back to Dr. Campbell, if you don't mind, and get your closing remarks.
Well, I definitely would also like to have an opportunity to view the other medical documentation. I think it was a good point to bring up the purview of the board and what we are and are not allowed to consider. And there are a lot of different hands, you know, in this pie, so to speak, respected to what's taken place from beginning to very end. Ultimately, we have to consider the actions, you know, from the time that the appointment started, from the time the appointment ended, and what took place, and whether it was consensual and informed, and that's very limited in our scope, respective to all of the other issues that get brought up, and you know how troubling that is. And I'm not exactly sure what Barbara, you know, would like to see out of this entire situation, you know, considering everybody else's involvement separate from Dr. Cascio. You know, but hopefully they do realize that, you know, our scope is limited to his actions that day and the evidence that's brought before us. And that it, everything else cannot be brought into it. And so I don't have any other questions right now. And I do believe that there could have been a lot more communication and that situations like these are often resolved through effective communication and from beginning to end and making different decisions. And so, you know, if the board is wanting to just position the case today, I would definitely be interested in discussing some required continuing medical education. That's all I have.
I had to send
how would you like that to come under it came a letter of concern with CME for communication skills?
Yes, and you also brought up, well, you know, I don't know exactly what his knowledge of the, you know, I understand that he was just, you know, brought in as a contractor and didn't have any ultimate control over what was paid and what was agreed to. And so that makes us assessing negligence onto him for that rather difficult. So yeah, I would stick with that.
Okay. Do you mind kind of giving us the verbiage you'd like, and then we can craft from there?
I think they did, yeah.
During the investigative period.
Oh, do you want me to?
Sure. If the other board members are.
May 24th.
Are okay to proceed with dispositioning the case today, then I would ultimately make a motion that the board issued Dr. Cascio a non-disciplinary letter of concern and require continuing medical education training in the area of patient communication.
Patient communication skills.
Communication skills.
And if I could add to that, Dr. Cascio, anything you have in reference to exomes on your website, if you could take those down, please.
It's already been taken down.
Okay. So we have a motion out there. Does anyone want to add to this? Does anyone want to delete this? Does anyone want to go a separate way? Let me roll call through then. Let me, Dr. Papil, let me start with you.
I would actually like to second the motion, but and the reason I would say that is I don't feel like, looking through the patient's history, there was no mention of cancer, no mention of thyroid issues, there was no mention of any of those things in the patient's history. So I understand Dr. Rubin's concern over that. I feel like that's bringing information in after the fact that wasn't available to Dr. Coscio from the complainant. That would be my thought, is it's just kind of a little unfair to bring that data in at this point, given the patient never shared that in the beginning. So I would actually make a motion to second that.
Why didn't he ask me?
That information was shared with the company.
Okay.
It couldn't have been. It's five.
Let me go up to my physician members, Dr. Spatt.
I would concur with Dr. Papia at this time on it as well.
So let me go ahead, Gail, so we could probably, wrap through this. Can we go ahead and make a roll call on the motion? The motion, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Campbell, was for a non-disciplinary letter of concern, CME, we could put 6 hours on patient communication skills.
Maybe add in ethical standards.
And ethical standards, thank you.
And who was that, please?
That was Phyllis Lane.
What? Okay. Everyone who speaks, apologize, this is Attorney General Justin Larson. Everybody who speaks needs to identify themselves before, and right now we are in the deliberation period and only the board members should be making any statements.
Ms. Anthony, could you give a roll call on that motion in reference to ethical standards? That was not a board member.
Yes.
So that's not part of our non-disciplinary letter of concern.
And Mr. Chair, I believe it was Dr. Campbell who made the original motion. And then I think you added the 6 hours portion. I don't think you specified hours. Is that okay in your motion, Dr. Campbell?
Yes, sir. Thank you. That would be included in my motion.
And Dr. Popiel, I think, seconded the motion. Are you okay with that as well, the 6 hours?
Yes, sir, I am. This is Dr. Popiel.
So we have a motion. So we need roll call. I'll have Ms. Anthony give that to us.
And this is Gail Anthony. If I may, I'd like to confirm that Dr. Campbell and Dr. Popiel, the motion is 6 hours, a non-disciplinary order for a non-disciplinary letter of concern. Is that what you said? Or did you say an order for CME?
I believe Dr. Campbell said non-disciplinary letter of concern with the order of CME.
This is Dr. Campbell, that is correct.
So it is a letter of concern, and it is a separate order for non-disciplinary CME, 6 hours in communication skills, patient communication skills. Those 6 hours are included or not included with the 30 hours required each year?
They're not included.
Not included. And when do you want these done by?
Dr. Campbell, are you okay with 3 months?
I would feel better about it if we gave them 60 days.
Okay.
I feel that's for 6 hours, and we don't want any repeats.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is
so
Gail. This is Gail Anthony.
Yeah,
so the CME, 6 hours and non-disciplinary patient communication skills will be required to be done within 60 days of the order. And it is not included in the CME required each year. And the regarding the letter of concern, please, what is the area of concern specifically?
Patient interaction and communication.
Would it be lack of patient interaction / communication?
That's correct. And informed consent as well. I mean, ultimately, unless there, I mean, do we have a signed informed consent somewhere?
Yes.
Yes, he did get that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then so we'll just the first part.
Ms. Anthony, you have that?
I do.
Okay. And then I'll have you roll call it for official closure.
Okay. And Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gowland?
Aye. And Gail, I just wanted to let you know I have to get off the call, but I'll be back in a couple hours if you guys are still on.
Okay, so Ms. Gallen, you're leaving the meeting?
I am.
Okay, it is.
I need your vote, Ms. Gallen, before you.
I said aye, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Aye, yes.
And it is 12:35.
12:35, but the records show Ms. Gallen has left the meeting. Go ahead, Gail, with the roll call.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
I abstain. This is Dr. Rubin.
Okay. And motion carries.
Okay. Let's move on to case number 20-159, and that's going to be Dr. Fernandez. And it's Dr. Fernandez for, I think Mr. King is for legal counsel. Are they available?
Yes, this is Scott King. I'm here on the line. Thank you.
Gail, I guess I could turn back over to you.
Okay. Gail Anthony. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, it is 12:36 on August 12, 2021. Pursuant to ARS 3215-51F, this is the formal interview regarding Dr. Lena Fernandez, case number 20-159. And we've established that the licensee is present. Is Dr. Fernandez present?
Yes. Good morning.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. And counsel's present, Attorney Scott King. And I am Gail Anthony. The following board members are present: Dr. Sadlick, Dr. Popio, Ms. Tibbetts, Dr. Spatt, Dr. Campbell, and Dr. Rubin. The other one. You have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today, the process for the formal interview, and the possible actions the board may take. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. The board will hear a brief overview of the case and then will interview you. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during the interview, you may ask them through the board chair. This proceeding is being recorded to provide a record. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly. Only one person may speak at a time. Please remember to introduce yourself each time prior to speaking. And I will read a brief overview.
And if there are any ways you want to summarize it, you can feel free. You don't have to read everything.
This complaint regarding Dr. Fernandez is case number 20-159. We received the complaint by patient LS. It is alleged Dr. Fernandez may have taken advantage of patient Ellis, who was very ill at the time of presentation to the clinic. It's alleged she charged for services not rendered. It's alleged she failed to follow up on patients pending COVID-19 results. It is alleged she failed to address positive COVID-19 lab results and failed to keep adequate medical records and failed to ensure the safety of the patient and other patients in the clinic and the clinic staff while treating COVID-19 positive patients.
Mr. King, will you be speaking or Dr. Fernandez?
Dr. Fernandez will, but I would like to make a very brief opening statement.
Mr. King, this is Gail Anthony. Can I swear you in, please?
Yes.
Okay. Can you raise your right hand, please?
Yes.
Do you swear to that this testimony is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. King, proceed.
Thank you. In the board's confidential investigative report on page 17 of 211, there is an October 15, 2020 email that complainant LS sent to Ms. Anthony. In the October 15, 2020 email, LS stated in pertinent part, at my subsequent appointment on July 3rd, I saw Dr. Fernandez, and she was very aware we had conversations about my being COVID positive. I remember asking her if we could rule out Valley Fever since I'm positive for COVID. She said the results for that have not come back yet, but you could have both, so let's wait. I tested negative for Valley Fever. At the board meeting on November 12th, 2020, which occurred less than a month after LS sent the October 15, 2020 email to Ms. Anthony, Dr. Campbell questioned LS about what she told Dr. Fernandez at the July 3 office visit when Dr. Fernandez knelt beside her. Dr. Campbell specifically asked LS if she told Dr. Fernandez that she was COVID positive. LS responded to Dr. Campbell and said, I don't know if I said I have COVID. I don't know if I made that specific statement. Inherent inconsistencies exist between LS's statement contained in the October 15, 2020 email to Ms. Anthony, which states that on July 3rd, Dr. Fernandez was very aware of LS's COVID positive status and that they had conversations about her COVID positive status versus LS's response to Dr. Campbell's question on November 12, 2020, where she stated, I don't know if I said I have COVID. Consequently, the reasonableness of LS statements made in the email and at the board meeting is now at issue, as is LS's credibility. Given the patient's inconsistent statements, the board must now speculate about which story, number one or number two, is probably true. Based on these conflicting statements, one can say that the preponderance of the evidence, which is a more likely than not standard, demonstrates that LS probably told Dr. Fernandez about her COVID positive status. In contrast, Dr. Fernandez has said from the beginning that LS never disclosed her COVID positive status to her. We respectfully submit that insufficient evidence exists to support the letter of reprimand and respectfully ask the board to issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern as the foundation for its previous order of non-disciplinary CME regarding adequate medical record keeping. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. King, how many hours of CME has Dr. Fernandez completed? Is aware at this current date? Or
I think I have to defer to Dr. Fernandez on that.
Okay. And
we've supplied the certificate to the board, though.
Okay. Ms. Anthony, could you swear Dr. Fernandez in?
Yes. Dr. Fernandez, please raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Dr. Fernandez, we heard the opening, but Mr. King, anything else you'd like to highlight before we go through the board discussion?
No, I think unless you have specific questions for me, Mr. King highlighted all the information that you needed.
Okay. So let me go through, let me start off, I'm going to work on through the bottom of the list to go up. So that would put it back on you, Dr. Rubin, for any additional insight you have. I think what Mr. King is saying is they would like this reduced to a letter of concern. And Mr. King, I would assume that you're fine with the CME, but I think with a broad basis, you'd like, okay, you'd like a letter of concern versus a disciplinary, correct?
Correct, and the CME, yes. We're not contesting that.
Okay.
This is Dr. Rubin. Thank you, Dr. Sadalek. I enjoy when counsel and board can work together, and as you know, we are here to adjudicate cases and protect the public, and I think that what Mr. King said is right on, and I am interested in reducing the reducing to a non-disciplinary action and continue with the CME included. Not sure the official saying. What I'm saying is good work, thank you, and I'm in agreement.
Okay.
Thank you.
And let me go through, and Dr. Spatt, let me move to you.
Oh, I don't have anything to say at this point, and I concur with what Dr. Rubin statement earlier.
Okay. And thank you. And Dr. Campbell?
I also concur with the action of non-disciplinary letter and area of concern, and then also the CME, and have no other questions.
Okay. And Ms. Tibbetts, I'm moving up to you.
I agree with what Dr. Rubin and Dr. Campbell have stated.
Okay. Dr. Popiel?
Yeah, I got a couple things I wanted to mention. So I have no concerns with the treatments that were provided in this situation. My concern is kind of how the chart notes read. If you guys recall, so the treatments were done in June, July, essentially. All chart notes, oh, let me back up. The complaint was filed with the board in August 19th, and all the chart notes were done August 30th. So all the chart notes were done months after seeing the patient and were done after the complaint actually communicated with the board. The chart notes all represent what looks to be cut and paste, and they also represent a 30-minute visit on each appointment that Dr. Fernandez is charting. So each also chart note suggests the COVID positive or the COVID results are pending. So essentially, Dr. Fernandez is saying that she met with the patient for 30 minutes for each visit. And during that 30 minutes, at no time, the patient communicated to her that she was COVID positive. And at no time, she felt the urge to follow up on COVID testing results that were out there. That the chart notes all suggest that she's waiting for those chart notes. So I have some concerns over what we can, you know, actually count on as far as Dr. Fernandez's recollection regarding these communications with the patient, given that the chart notes were all done months after the fact, and also obviously, again, look to be cut and paste. And the 30-minute visit that is documented at each time is in absolute directly against what the complaint is saying, that she never had minutes to talk to her. And when she did sit down with her, that it was a very brief visit. So I understand what the board is saying. I have some major concerns about the record keeping for Dr. Fernandez and the copy and paste. All the chart notes were essentially done within a 24-hour period, 6 to 8 weeks after the visit happened. So I don't know what I can rely on regarding these chart notes, other than you get a board summary and all of a sudden your chart notes get done a week or two later. I don't know what to say based on that, other than it raises some concerns. So if the board sees fit to reduce this, I understand that, but I also have some major concerns with how the chart notes are done and why Dr. Fernandez failed to communicate and get follow-up testing results for COVID, and how Dr. Fernandez is trying to fly directly in the face of the patient's experience at the office.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead, Mr. King.
Oh, thank you. At the very first visit, I believe on June 29th, Dr. Fernandez offered the patient COVID testing, and it's documented in that record that the patient refused the COVID testing. It's my understanding that when the patient came in for the IVs, that she was there for 2 or 3 hours at a time, and Dr. Fernandez, 30-minute time period is over the span of that time that she was getting the IVs. She didn't spend an entire 30 minutes with her at one sitting. She would come in periodically to see how she was doing throughout the course of her treatment. So Dr. Fernandez may have more to say on this than I do, but thank you.
Dr. Papil, you brought up some great points, and I appreciate that. Dr. Fernandez, can you elaborate a little bit on the points Dr. Papil brought up in reference to the timing and in reference to the month later going and doing the charting?
Yes, and we discussed this in the previous meeting as well. The charting,
right.
I admitted that the charting had fallen behind because last year was just our patients needed more attention. The truth is I'm still catching up on some charts that were still completing from last year. Our patients needed more attention one-on-one. It wasn't uncommon to get 5-10 phone calls every day, and we were here till 9-10 p.m. Our team was working really hard to make sure that our patients were taken care of, making sure that they weren't just because there were a lot of them who were just scared and in fear. And so it's not uncommon for any doctor who doesn't get to, even in the previous clinic that I worked in, it wasn't uncommon that we didn't get to finish the chart weeks, sometimes a month later. But that doesn't mean that there was nothing new added to the chart. My team has their computer in each room. When the patients come in, they get the vitals, they get the timing when they started IV. If I'm there with the patient, talking to the patient, any pertinence, I put them in right away. And then when I get a chance to complete the chart, I get to it. So that's really when it comes to what completing the chart later. And I think we have discussed that I was willing to complete the non-disciplinary CME in regards to charting. We have more team members now that are helping us to complete those charts in a more timely manner. But it was just impossible to get to the chart on time. Usually in the past, within a week, I would get my chart notes done. I would come to the office on the weekend, be able to do that. But in last year, because of the pandemic, there were a lot of patients that needed just one-on-one over the phone time with me. So I didn't really get a chance to get to that. And then I know that's on my part, and I completely own it. As far as every time a patient came in, at least I believe 7 visits with me. I started IV, took me initially, you know, the first few times she was dehydrated, so it took me about 10-15 minutes to get her started in IV treatment. And then before I started the treatment, I went in and said, you know, is there anything, how are you feeling? And every time she came in, she reported she was feeling well. The thing is, she had passed COVID-19 tested in the hospital was negative, and then I was pending the main workup that we did, the initial visit on the June 29th, including the bowel fever. I know she had made a comment to you that to the board that she told me on July 3rd to complete the bowel fever test because she was COVID positive. That's not true. I did all the necessary blood work up at the beginning of the initial visit. And I spent the initial visit about 2 hours with her. I want to make sure that we're continuously checking her vitals every time she came in, continuously monitoring her health. As far as the charting, we have changed the process now. So instead of this cognitive piece, we have a new platform where we use for new patient visits and then the other one for a follow-up. So we've made this modification, and then we have, as I said, more team members helping us be more on time. But you have to understand, considering the circumstances, and we work endlessly because we're also, you know, our clinic is literally 5 minutes from the hospital. So a lot of patients were coming to us directly from the hospital because they weren't getting well. They weren't having the answer, not necessarily COVID positive, but nobody could figure out what was going on with them. So we tried to do the best to help them or refer them out. It was impossible to make sure that I'm taking all my time with the patients in office and finishing my chart on a timely matter. And like I said, I take that full responsibility and we're changing the process. Needless to say, the thing is, I am also a chemist and a scientist and a researcher. So I've done all these kind of research on viruses and bacteria and formulations. I've done extensive training with Dr. Paul Anderson. He reviewed all the charts. He sent you his input. I've also treated thousands and thousands of cases with my patients. When it came to the COVID cases, I would not treat it because this was something new to me. I wasn't aware, even though I was trying to get as much answers from Dr. Anderson and from our colleagues. If I was aware the patient was COVID positive, I would feel a lot more comfortable referring because it was impossible to get them out to the primary care doctor. The only they could do at the time was phone consultation. They wouldn't be able to see in physical with the patient. So at least I would refer them out to make sure that I'm not missing any pieces of, at the end, making sure the patient is taken care of. Ultimately, the patient was getting well every time we're coming in. And because of past negative COVID results, she didn't mention that she ever got the results. So I'm just, probably because number one, she was feeling better. Number two, might have been afraid that I was going to refer her out because I'm literally, like I said, 5 minutes from the hospital. And I've referred a ton of patients I've referred more patients out since last year to now than I've ever had in my career. Because when it comes to that patient care, and even with our team, we have regular meetings, we invest a lot in our learning to make sure that our patients, no matter what, they're getting treatments that are safe and effective. And I understand your point of saying the charts were not done on time. You also, as I said, you have to understand the timing was critical for me to spend as much with patients than me not getting back with this 5-10 phone calls that I was getting every day from my patients, just making sure that they've either watched news and were freaking out or had family members out of state or somewhere else who wasn't feeling good. They just wanted that care that we do, make sure that we're staying, have some support from our end. LS continued, I was not aware of her COVID positive result, but I had, even with any of my patients, I never promised them that I can take care of their cancer or their COVID-19, any of that. What we're taught as a naturopath is you're here, you're not feeling good, you're fatigued, you're dehydrated. She didn't have any difficulty breathing. That's why the second or third time she went to hospital, they sent her home within 4 hours because she wasn't in major distress. So she came in and we're just trying to boost her up with the immune system and optimize her electrolytes because based on the lab that she brought to me, the basic lab, and I did some more work up here, she was dehydrated. She was low in iron. So I was trying to do the best I can to help her out. Plus, she was a referral to me from a really good patient. So that day she came in, we had to rearrange my schedule just so we could take care of it, could take care of her effectively and safely. Even despite of not being aware that she was COVID positive, we roomed her, we isolated her in a special room. We were always using all the necessary protocols that we use, gloves, masks, every time to take care of her. And she felt good. She got the results she needed. And I'm not really exactly sure. I was in shock when I saw the report from medical board because to me, patient care is the priority and it's top priority, making it safe and effective, but also helping them whether through here or referring them out, I'm going to go on and beyond. And our team sends some things to help them.
Thank you, Dr. Fernandez. A couple things that Dr. Papil brought up And what I do recall when I was going through these notes from previously, the main key is, as you probably have gathered, is Bobby was involved at 1.2, is to keep the office communication flowing and also document the office communication up front. And then in reference to the note, when if since you are doing electronic charting, you may want to, if you're that far behind, you may want to state that this note is being dictated via whatever it was, September 2020, when this patient was seen. Otherwise, it looks as though, and Dr. Papil pointed that out, is that you're cutting and pasting and just making, you know, producing notes, which is somewhat, as you can well imagine, it's a problem. So, you know, please watch that. Those are, you know, my concerns. And then if you're going to spend time with a patient, you may want to bear at the end of the note, put time spent with patient communication, you know, 10 minutes or whatever it happens to be. So that there's not a miscommunication when it comes back to the patient saying they didn't spend any time with me. If I digress to Dr. Rubin, he proposed a motion, but I need to ask the board members if they have anything else to add. No. Dr. Rubin, you started, so can you formalize the motion that you had? I think we're looking at Mr. King wanted to have the non-disciplinary letter of concern. CME would stay intact. Did you have anything else that you want to add to this or delete from this?
I'm still thinking. This is Dr. Rubin.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin Larson with the AG's office. I just wanted to really quickly clarify on the CME, because this is a rehearing and review, or a rehearing of the previous formal interview. And I understand Mr. King said that they're not contesting the CME order, but that wasn't necessarily clear in the rehearing, and I don't it's unclear to me that order is still in effect. So I wanted to clarify or see if one of the members wanted to clarify with whether Ms. Fernandez has already, or Dr. Fernandez has already completed the CME or started to complete the CME, because otherwise it would just be a moot question that we wouldn't need to include in the order. But if she hasn't yet, then I do think we'll need to include that in the new order as well.
Dr. Fernandez, have you completed the CME?
The non-disciplinary thing I'm waiting from year end to verify which exactly. I sent a few weeks back some recommendations that some CMEs that I found on ABNMA and through everyone, and then the naturopathic website that I was going to complete. I haven't received any conclusion whether I should complete those. I know Ms. Gale had mentioned that there is a new CME on charting available at ABNMA, but I haven't been able to locate that. So if you could direct me, or any of you help me with exactly what's been in me, I will continue to finish, then I will be more than happy to do it. I'm already finishing up the rest of my CMEs that I need, because I remember during the last meeting, it was mentioned that the 8 CMEs that I needed to do, or non-disciplinary CMEs, were within the 30 credit hours that I need, so I'll be completing the rest of those by September. However, those non-disciplinary, I'm just waiting for directions from you, because I want to make sure that I complete the right thing, and really that's where it just comes down to.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott King. I'm just looking at my file here, and Becca Fernandez has completed 10 seminars, which we and that was on July 2nd this year, and I believe we forwarded that to the board to review.
going to complete the rest of the documentation TME requirement.
Okay. And Mr. Larson, would you want it, with this motion being crafted currently, would you want that CME obviously to be stated the same way and added to any type of new motion?
Mr. Chair, it sounded like Dr. Fernandez said she was still waiting for some direction on which CME the board wanted her to do as part of its non-disciplinary order. So I would just defer to the board and state that, you know, you can add that to the order for this motion, and just, you know, give whatever guidelines you'd like to include in addition to, you know, if you do a letter of concern or something like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
We can just redo it.
Dr. Rubin, I'll digress back down to you. You were in contemplation.
This is Dr. Rubin. Indeed, I was. And I was going to ask Dr. Sadalek if it would be possible for quickly Dr. Papil to state his side again, because it was compelling and it was some thoughts that I share. Would you mind, Dr. Papil?
Sure, that's fine. I just made a little summary for myself of just the timeline of events. So to be more concise, the complaint came in on August 19th. Chart notes were done August 30th. All the chart notes were done within a 24-hour period. My concern on the chart notes is that each chart note documents waiting for a second COVID test from PCP. So Mr. King brought up the point that it kind of counteracted that. Every single chart note from Dr. Fernandez says we're waiting for a second COVID test. So in my mind, that's negligent on Dr. Fernandez's situation to not follow up on those. Clearly, she's documenting them in the chart note. If she's treated this patient for a month following the second COVID test, personally, I would have wanted to have those results, positive or negative, so we know which direction we're going. So my concern was that given the amount of time that's documented spent with the patient on each visit, it seems illogical that that didn't come up, whether it be coming from the patient stating she has COVID or from Dr. Fernandez saying, hey, have you got those test results yet? The other thing that I was going to comment on was that we had the phone records from the complainant documenting that after her visit at the office, she got home, she got the COVID testing results and called the office. I believe that the phone records documented that and supported that she called the office immediately upon getting the second COVID test results to let Bobby know. And from her statement, that was told to just continue treatment. What else was there? I think that was kind of my summary. So again, I have no concerns with the treatments provided. I appreciate Dr. Anderson's input. There is no concern in my mind as to the treatments that were provided. My only concern is the documentation in the chart notes and what seems to be a lack of follow through on, at a minimum, getting that second copy of the test results from the patient. So that was kind of my summary of events here.
This is Dr. Rubin. Thank you. It's compelling, and thank you for putting that together so nicely, because I hadn't had that in my head or on my paper so nicely. I get it. I'm still in favor of non-disciplinary CME order. This is Dr. Rubin. That is not a motion. It is an opinion.
It's an opinion, and then are you comfortable with the current CME?
This is Dr. Rubin. Yes, I am comfortable with the current CME.
Okay. So would you like to form a motion for us?
Yes. This is Dr. Rubin. Yes, I may need some help, Dr. Sadalek. And tell me, let me form one, and if I need help, let me know. This is Dr. Rubin. I move for non-disciplinary CME to be consistent with what is currently in place.
Okay, and then what would you, Mr. King's asking that basically at the current time, he has a different item for her disciplinary. Would you like that moved to letter of concern? Disciplinary, non-disciplinary letter of concern? Or do you want to keep it the way that it was at the prior meeting?
Hang on, I'm looking over my choices right now.
Okay.
Hold on. Sorry. Sorry, you guys, I'm just a little slower on pulling up these documents.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin. I just wanted to clarify really quickly that, again, this is a rehearing, and there's been a lot of references to the previous order. I mean, that order is, you know, this is a redo. So we want to be really clear as to what we're ordering here and not just simply referring back to the previous order. So when it comes to, you know, non-disciplinary letter of concern or CMEs, I think we should be really clear as to what we're including in the order. And I would also just suggest that while Dr. Rubin is looking through his options, we can get any other thoughts from any other board members to the extent there are any.
Let me go up to Campbell.
This is Dr. Campbell. And this is just talking out loud here. I know that the AMA, of course, there's PACE, you know, the PACE training related to charting. Also, the AMA put out an all-inclusive training for improving care delivery and EHR processes. I believe it was CME credit of 13.25 hours for electronic health record keeping and CME, things that were included in that overall training was also things like in-basket restructuring for improved efficiency, health record optimization strategies for thriving and implementing, you know, what's important and what's not. And so I'm not sure if we want to simply, you know, again, cancel whatever we had done previously and simply restart with a non-disciplinary order and mandate X amount of hours for training like we did in the last case.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to say at this time. Thank you.
Ms. Tibbetts?
I don't have anything.
Okay, we lost Ms. Gallen. Dr. Rubin, you were kind of deliberating. Do you want another moment? And I'll roll through with
this. This is Dr. Rubin. I would prefer not to make the motion because I don't think I'm going to make as good of a motion, say, as Dr. Campbell would. But for sake of discussion, I am still in favor of a non-disciplinary order for CME.
Okay. Dr. Popiel?
I'm fine with making that transition. I think Dr. Fernandez probably gets the point at this point as far as the concerns we have. And so I would be fine with proceeding forward with the letter of concern with the non-disciplinary CME.
Okay. Is that the motion?
I didn't know. I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion for a letter of concern related to patient communication, chart notes, documentation of services provided with a non-disciplinary letter for CME for 8 hours related to charting and patient communication.
Okay. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add to that motion? Which is a brand new motion with the CME. I believe that CME Mr. Larson is probably pretty similar to the CME that he had prior, non-disciplinary.
I would just ask that you, Dr. Papil, I believe, who made the motion, just clarify what CME or what exactly CME that is from the previous order.
Dr. Papil, you comfortable with that?
I don't recall what I need to say on that. I apologize.
Dr. Sadlick, this is Gail Anthony. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, if I may, the previous order for continuing medical education reflected 8 hours of CME in the area of medical charting. And it's already stated in the order that the CME course must be pre-approved by board staff. And as a footnote, I included that the CME provided by the AZNMA regarding charting has already been approved by the board. So there was information in there of already approved CME in that order.
And that was on her original consent. Basically, that was on her agreement that she had signed. And that was on page 2 of that agreement.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, I don't believe there is a consent agreement. I believe it was the order following the last formal interview.
It was.
Okay.
I
think what Ms. Anthony is saying is that there was a pre-approval for the 8 hours and that there was one that was noted that was already pre-approved, and that was the, if you want to read
it. This is Gail Anthony. That was 8 hours and charting. That was from the Naturopathic Medical Association regarding the CME for charting.
So the way it read was 8 hours of CME, Dr. Papil, 8 hours of CME in the area of medical charting. The CME course must be pre-approved by board staff, which Ms. Anthony did put in the footnote, and are included in the 30 CME hours required for licensure.
And Mr. Chairman, this is good. We have no objection. We have no objection to that.
Right. Thank you, Mr. King.
You guys need me to restate that in the motion, or can you tie in what Ms. Anthony had mentioned there?
Can you restate it, or do you want Ms. Anthony to tie in the prior language?
Could we do that?
I think it's already, Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin. I think it's already all kind of incorporated. So here's, I'll just clarify it, and Dr. Papil can correct me. It's a non-disciplinary letter of concern regarding charting and patient communication. Is that correct? And then 8 hours of 8 hours of CME for medical charting to be pre-approved by the board, and with and notifying Dr. Fernandez that the AZNMA pre-approved course on charting has already been approved by the board, so she could just do that one without pre-approval, and then and that would be, I believe that's the extent of the motion.
Perfect.
Dr. Papil, you okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we have a motion. I'm going to second that motion, and then I'll ask Ms. Anthony to do roll call.
Are we clear? Okay. Just 1 minute. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen? Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Gallen is absent. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Mr. King and Dr. Fernandez, good luck. Best wishes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's go ahead and move on to case number, we'll call case number 2165, and then we'll take a break after this case before we get into 188. But let's go ahead with case number 2165, and that's Dustin Johnson. And this is basically this is an initial review continued. Just I think when she has a moment, just give us a brief overview of the case.
Yes. This is Gail Anthony, Dr. Sadlick, members of the board. On August 18th, 2020, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a notice from the Arizona Department of Health Services outlining an apparent discrepancy between the number of medical marijuana certifications issued by respondent between January 1st of 2020 and May 31st of 2020, and the number of CSPMP database queries respondent performed during that time frame. According to the DHS notice, respondent certified 73 patients for medical marijuana during that time frame and queried the database zero times. In her response to the board, respondent states, quote, I had been under the impression that my employee was checking the pharmacy board. As it turns out, he was not, end quote. In summary, respondent failed to perform a CSPMP audit report on 73 patients prior to certifying for medical marijuana. Respondent admits that she thought her employee was performing these queries, but did not. Knowing these reports were not provided, respondent must have signed off on the certification form, attesting she had reviewed the CSPMP audit report when in fact she had not. Respondent failed to provide three of the four medical charts subpoenaed by the board. Respondent failed to supply an answer in a timely manner regarding location. The medical records respondent did supply the board may not meet the standard for adequate medical records and may reflect inadequate medical care for failure to perform physical examinations, including vitals. At the meeting of July 8, 2021, the board reviewed the case. At that meeting, the board voted to continue the matter and requested charts of three patients seen by respondent within the last 6 to 12 months. The board requested the additional charts for the purpose of review. Through respondent's attorney, board staff received the following on July 14, 2021. This information was received prior to board staff initiating the specific request. According to her attorney, respondent now resides in New York. Based on the records provided, it's not clear if respondent saw these three patients in Arizona or via telemedicine. And I have included the copies of those three chart notes in your packet today.
And Dr. Johnson, I have a couple quick questions. I went through your chart notes. Do you have those available? Or are you with legal counsel today?
Hi, good afternoon. This is Sarah Stark. I'm Ms. Johnson's counsel. She is in the car traveling, so give her a minute. I think she may probably have muted herself. Dr. Johnson, are you there?
I am. It dropped, but I'm back.
Dr. Johnson, Bruce Sadlick, I have a couple of quick questions for you. I went through your notes that Ms. Stark had given to us, and this patient AK, when I looked at the lab, I saw the prior TSH, which it looks like you've corrected to 4.90. And then, what concerned me is that you have a creatinine level of 192, which would obviously be not correct. Was that just a typo?
No, I had the lab retest that to make sure.
Okay. And did you state that in the closing of your note, was a false creatinine level?
I don't believe that I did, no. I don't believe that I did. But I did have the patient retest because when we went through that, that was high. So I had them retest it to make sure, and it was, in fact, a wrong number.
Okay. You may want to go in or at least attach an addendum of some sort and go through that
okay.
Trans- transaction that you had with both the lab and the patient.
Sure.
And let me turn it, Dr. Rubin, I'm going to work from the bottom back up the list, so tell me your opinion. I think Dr. Papil asked her to submit these notes, and she did. So I need your opinion on those.
Hi, Dr. Sally, Dr. Rubin. I was not present last month, and so whereas I reviewed this chart, I don't know what occurred last month, so I'm happy to comment now, but or comment later. It's up to you.
Go ahead and comment now.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, apologies. This is Mr. Larson again. I missed which doctor that was who wasn't present the last.
Dr. Rubin.
I would suggest since Dr. Rubin wasn't there at the last meeting that he not continue to participate in this matter just because we want to have consistency throughout. But I mean, it's ultimately up to Dr. Rubin whether he believes he's prepared to render an opinion and weigh in on it based on his review of the record. But, that I'm just kind of, that would be my suggestion is that that he abstain from this one.
Dr. Rubin, I'll let you hold on this one then. Let me go to Dr. Campbell.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
And, Dr., let me ask Ms. Tippett.
I don't have any questions at this time.
And Dr. Spatz, let's get your...
Dr. Spatz, Johnson. Are you still doing MMJ certification?
No, I'm not.
Either. Oh, okay. All right. So what are you doing now? I'm just what are you doing now regarding?
I've just seen another specialist. I'm set to have surgery, so I'm taking some time off.
Oh, okay. And the time that you did the MMJ certification, is this your own clinic or did you work with someone else?
No, I work for someone else.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Tippett?
No questions.
And Dr. Papil, I'm sure you've read through her notes, your thought process on it.
Yeah, I think that the chart notes that were submitted certainly reflect a good understanding of proper chart notes and, assuming that is a good representation of how she's doing all of her notes. I would be happy with those. So I think we're back to just the original concern of certifying patients or checking off that she's certified, checking the PMP without actually checking it. So even if we have an employee that's supposed to be doing that, my anticipation would be is that they're checking it, printing it, and she's still looking at it. So obviously still the concern of documenting that she's looked at the PMP and not seeing that. So I think we're back to probably just, in my opinion, more of a letter of concern for failure to check PMP for medical marijuana certifications.
Okay. And then do you want to attach any CME to that?
I guess if she was continuing doing the medical marijuana, potentially, I guess, given what the chart note looks like, I don't necessarily have any need for CME, but I'm open to a discussion on that.
Okay. And Dr. Johnson, do you think I know you prepared these for the board, but do you think you know how to do just the basic proper SOAP, a soap note?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And I see you provided those. So I think where we're back to is the amount of people that unfortunately you assumed EMPs checked and they weren't. So that would probably be, I'd have to agree with Dr. Papil, probably a letter of concern. Whether we do this, any type of CME attached to it, it appears that you, and I'll get the other board members' opinion, it appears that you know how to chart now. So I'll go ahead then, Dr. Peel. Was that a motion for the letter of concern?
It can be. I just wanted to give my opinion for others to think about how they wanted to proceed, but I will certainly make a motion if everybody's ready.
Yeah. Any other board discussion on that? So the letter of concern, you could attach to it medical charting 8 hours, or you could be pleased with the notes that she has produced and leave it at a letter of concern.
My thought would be to leave it as is, but if you're, are you comfortable with that, or would you like some CME? Certainly not going to hurt.
I think what might be helpful is the letter of concern and then the 8 hours of CME and medical charting. That could be part of her 30, because that's a fairly decent course. And then she wouldn't have to go and seek additional hours.
That's fine. I propose that.
Okay.
You want me to make the motion?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. I'll make a motion for a letter of concern, I guess, for unprofessional conduct related to failing to check the PMP for medical marijuana certification, and a request for CME for 8 hours for related to chart notes to be included within the normal 30 that is required each year.
Other board member, I'll second it. Other board members, any discussion?
This is Dr.
Go ahead, Dr. Campbell.
Dr. Johnson, respective to the form that you've completed, during which you signed and initialed that the CME, or pardon me, that the prescription monitoring program had been reviewed. Do you understand the board's concern when we have an important document that you've initialed, that you've done something, which then the Department of Agriculture is relying on? That statement and concurring with that, it kind of reflects poorly upon the profession when we have practitioners signing and attesting to things that they didn't do.
Right, you did.
Can you outline for the board how this is something that's not going to happen again?
It is absolutely not going to happen again. I'm not certifying medical marijuana patients, and as I said, I'm taking time off for personal reasons to have surgery. So I'm taking time off for myself.
Okay. And of course, this would go beyond just medical marijuana patients into really all duties and responsibilities that you have as a physician, correct?
Correct.
This is Dr. Campbell. I don't have any other questions, and I'm prepared to second the motion that was outlined.
Okay. I think Dr. Papil made it. I think I seconded it, and then your feedback was great. I appreciate that. So sounds like we're drawing closure, and I'll ask Ms. Anthony to give us a vote on this particular case number.
Dr. Sadlick, this is Gail Anthony. You wanted me to do roll call?
Yes, please.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin, you're recused? Motion carries.
And it is 1:32. Does anyone want, I'll move for a 5 minute break. Does anyone need more than 5 minutes? No? Okay, 1:32, and we'll take a 5 minute break. We'll be back here.